say that patriotism is the last refuge. Two weeks of scoundrel clean. Steal a little and they throw you in jail. Steal a lot and they make you clean.
I had to play that little clip of Bob Dylan because it is on one of the webpages of the Blue Ocean Institute, and my guest Carl Stefina is representing the Blue Ocean Institute. You're the executive director, Carl?
No, I'm the founder and president.
Founder and president. And you quoted Bob Dylan on the section where you were talking about trying to become a felon.
Yes. Well, you know, down in the Gulf, actually in all U.S. waters, it's illegal to discharge oil, and many boats carry a little plaque that cites the chapter and verse of the federal law that says illegal to discharge oil. And, you know, if you go out with some oil that you want to dump to get rid of, you can get in a lot of trouble for doing that. And if I, you know, as I was saying all last summer, if I got in a boat with 10 gallons of motor oil and called the Coast Guard and said, here I am, I'm about to dump 10 gallons of oil, I imagine I would be in for a big fine and possibly arrest for however disorderly my conduct might appear. A little later in the summer, they actually made it a felony to get near the booms that were holding back the they were there to hold back the oil. They really didn't hold back too much of anything. But nobody from the disaster on the Deepwater Horizon has gone to jail. I don't think anybody's been arrested, actually. But throughout the whole Gulf region, many people were hassled incredibly by cops and what we used to call rent-a-cops, private guards, even private guards on public roads. So
because there's a lot of YouTube on that.
Right, yeah. Well, the blowout was one event that happened in one region of the country and focused a lot of attention on the catastrophe of having all this oil spilling into the Gulf. But in my opinion, the real catastrophe is not the oil that we spill. It's the oil that we burn. And the real threat to the marshes in the Gulf was not really from the oil from the blowout. It's that the marshes are dying because of 10,000 miles of channels that have been cut in them, mainly to help service the oil rigs in the Gulf and to promote shipping up the Mississippi, as well as the flood control on the Mississippi. So this is not to say anything to excuse the companies involved that created the blowout. They had to do a lot of reckless and some very stupid things to get that to actually happen. But the everybody was focused on that for a little while. Then they their focus has gone mainly elsewhere. But the bigger problems preceded the blowout, and the bigger problems are ongoing. And we haven't really taken a lesson from the blowout itself to what the big problems are. There was a great opportunity there, and we haven't made the most of it.
Yeah, I've been promoting this show as a show about the anniversary of the BP blowout. And, of course, we've been talking about solutions, and because I want to make sure that everybody realizes that we're not just here to talk about, oh, BP is bad, BP is bad, oh, well. There are solutions, and there's a lot of different kinds of solutions. We've mentioned an awful lot here. And I'm sure everybody's heard the cliche, history repeats itself, or those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And I think part of that is because there are things in history that we don't want to repeat that are uncomfortable to contemplate and research and think about. And so people would rather look upon good things, and it's like, oh, well, you're being so negative if you think about bad things. Well, if you think about bad things with the idea of making them better, then you're not being negative at all. And I think people miss that when they want to criticize somebody, where we're not just talking about what the problems are, but we're talking about what the solutions are also. Now, Carl, it was oil and gas that came out, right?
Yeah.
Because people seem to talk about either oil or they talk about gas as if it was one or the other, but it was both.
It was, well, petroleum hydrocarbons really are oil and gas, and the gas is liquid at the depth that the pool is at when it's first tapped. But yeah, it was oil and gas.
And now where is it now, that oil, all that oil and gas?
Well, the gas is evaporated, and the oil is in a variety of places. Part of the oil is in the ocean. A large part of the oil is in the ocean. Some of it is in the seafloor sediments. Some of it came ashore and is buried in shoreside sediments. And a lot of the oil evaporated over the months that it was floating around in the Gulf. The water in the Gulf is very hot. The sun was beating down on it. You could actually see these big pancakes of oil, I guess you could call them. Some of them were the size of a car. Some of them were very little, but you could actually see them. Yeah, you could actually see them melting and evaporating in the heat on some of the days that I was down there out on the water in boats looking directly at it. So some of it is in the atmosphere, and a certain amount of it was burned as well. So it went up in smoke, so to speak. But lot of it is still in the system. It's in the system. It's dissipating. And nobody really knows what the ecological effects of it were. And I'm going to take exception to the statement that many people have made that this was the largest environmental disaster in the history of the United States. In my opinion, it was by no stretch of the imagination the largest environmental disaster. It was the largest unintended release of oil in history, and that's extremely bad. And a lot of recklessness and a lot of stupidity and a lot of greed made that happen. But there are many much worse problems ongoing, and some of them have to do with oil. Some of them have to do with other things. The parts that have to do with oil are with the oil that we actually burn and the coal that we burn and the gas that we burn. This is destabilizing the heat balance of the whole planet, and it's turning the oceans acidic. And that, I think, is the biggest environmental catastrophe in the history of the world. There are a lot of other things that have happened in the United States and elsewhere. We've cut down 95% of the ancient forests of the whole Pacific Northwest from Canada up through British Columbia. The most abundant bird in North America is extinct, the passenger pigeon. Several other birds that existed in the millions are extinct. The Native Americans suffered a genocidal holocaust in the 1800s. We need a little perspective on what the problems really are and are not. And as I said, many people thought that the oil blowout was going to kill the wetlands of Louisiana. It barely touched them. And many of the wetlands that got oiled were starting to grow back by the end of the summer. Meanwhile, though, because of the 10,000 miles of channels that have been cut, mainly to service oil rigs, and to facilitate shipping, and because of the upstream flood control, we lose about 25,000 acres of Gulf marsh every year that are being converted to open water because they're starved for sediment and because the banks are crumbling. So the great wetlands of Louisiana and the Mississippi Delta, which are the nurseries for the fish and shellfish that power most of the biggest seafood producing region outside of Alaska, those marshes are dying out, and they're being, you know, they're changing from marshland to open water, not because of the blowout. So I think that, as I said, not to excuse anything, but let's keep our eye on a couple of balls at a time. How bad the oil companies truly are, but how some of the worst problems are elsewhere. And many of the worst problems do involve the greed of oil companies and the way that they have really helped lock up energy politics and made it very, very difficult for other better sources to have an even playing field. So again, not to excuse them for anything, but
with two of the worst environmental catastrophes that come to my mind, and again, I don't want to rate them because it's a horrible way of looking at things. But both in 1979, one on the Rio Puerco River in New Mexico, which killed thousands of Native Americans and their cattle and sheep, and they're still dying from this. And then, of course, the Three Mile Island nuclear accident, which, again, spewed a lot of radiation. People are still dying from that.
Well, the Exxon Valdez with far less oil was a far worse event for the local people and for the local wildlife. There may be, I would say there's probably the Gulf blowout killed maybe 10,000 birds. The Exxon Valdez killed an estimated 250,000. It killed lots and lots of sea otters. There are no sea otters in the Gulf. There are sea turtles in the Gulf, not sea otters, but the numbers that died were very, very different, and that's because of the particulars. And also, the subsequent behavior of the oil company was very different as well. Exxon led the people of the Prince William Sound region into a 20-year death dance where they resolutely tried to not spend a single cent. And then they went to the Supreme Court, ridiculous Supreme Court that we have, courtesy of a couple of Republican presidents, and they got the damages that were awarded to the victims of the Exxon Valdez, they got those damages reduced by 80 to 90%. The behavior of BP in the Gulf was very different. They created this mini police state, which was just unbelievably awful. But on the other hand, they spent billions of dollars that they were not required to spend for a variety of reasons, mainly having to do with, I would say, their self-serving calculations. But there was a big difference between them paying the many thousands of fishermen and the many thousands of seaside resort owners and all these other people who just completely lost their paychecks for much of last year and tiding them over. I think they knew that they would have just incredible riots on their hands and probably permanently lose their access to U.S. oil fields, and I think that that was their calculation. They did fork over $20 billion to the U.S., thanks to President Obama. I think that was just a magnificent thing that he achieved that, of course, everybody has forgotten about. But there were a lot of significant differences and some very interesting comparisons between those two events.
Now, one of the things that the Gulf has that Alaska doesn't, or I guess Alaska does have a lot of cetaceans, a lot of whales.
Yes, it
does. But the Gulf has 29 different species of dolphins and whales. Now, were they just able to avoid wherever the oil was? Was that something they were able to do?
Well, I and a lot of people saw dolphins swimming in areas of moderate oil, and I don't know how that affected them. There seemed to have been some dolphins that were killed directly. It looked like there were not massive kills that were documented. There were a lot of them that were not affected for a variety of reasons. Virtually no oil got behind any barrier beaches, and there are a lot of dolphins in the back systems in some places, like in Alabama and Florida. Not a lot of heavy oil got that far east in the Gulf. Most of the heavy oil was between the water offshore Louisiana where the well was and part of Alabama. They may have been able to simply swim away from areas of heavy oil, most of them. There was elevated mortality of newborn dolphins recently in the news. Very elevated, but also not unprecedented. So the cause of that could have been that they were exposed to toxic chemicals from the oil at a critical time in gestation, or it could be something else. It could be some sort of disease not at all related to the oil. It could be a toxin from a toxic algal bloom that has not been detected or documented yet. It could be a few things. Nobody actually is sure. It could be the oil. It might not be the oil.
So I guess they're doing necropsies to find out the answers to
that. They're trying to find out, yes. Some of these things I don't know if people will actually ever really ascertain. There were a lot of... There was tremendous concern that the fishing industry would be permanently destroyed by the oil, and many fishermen were sure that they would never go fishing again. And they thought that after the BP money ran out, they would be out of luck and out of a job, and their houses would be worth nothing, and their communities would be ghost towns. That didn't happen. At the end of the summer, when people were able to go back to fishing, they started to open much of the Gulf that had been closed. And I should say, when I say much of the Gulf, we're talking about the U.S. waters of the northern Gulf. The actual surface oil was held to only about 5% of the entire Gulf of Mexico. It didn't travel very far because we were lucky with the winds and the currents.
But there was an underwater plume that went for miles.
Yeah, what's your concept of plume? This is an interesting question I like to ask people. What's the mental image you get from the word plume?
Well, I'm going by what I reports I saw that there was a mixture of petroleum and dispersing chemicals that was miles long that was being carried by underwater currents west.
That's true, but what's your mental picture of it?
My mental picture, I guess, is the darkness of the petroleum and the chemicals sort of going through the darkness of the water.
Right. I think that's the way everybody thinks of the word plume. But really what it means just by definition is it's an elevated amount of something within a larger area of something else. And it in the case of that plume, it didn't look like a river of petroleum or Hershey syrup down in the mid-depths of the ocean. The water samples were coming up clear, and you could only tell that it was a plume if you analyzed them, and they were finding elevated amounts of hydrocarbon that was at about the rate of concentration that you would find in a lot of sort of polluted coastal areas like Boston Harbor or someplace like that. So it wasn't a thick river of oil. It was just a very large area where they could detect that the oil and dispersants were mixed in detectable ways with the water. So the question is, how much stuff did that kill? And the answer is, no one knows.
Right. And they don't know what it's doing now. Do they know where it is?
No, well, I think it's nowhere. I think it's very, very diluted. And there are a lot of I forgot to mention this earlier. There are a lot of microbes in the Gulf of Mexico that do eat petroleum. And so a lot of what was there has had quite a few months now to be metabolized by these microbes. So my guess is that... I should have mentioned, I didn't really finish the story about the fishing. When people went back to fishing that they thought would be destroyed forever, they found that there were incredible numbers of fish because, unprecedentedly, for 6 months, the fish got a break from fishing. Now,
right.
You know, fishing kills millions and millions of fish and shrimp. Those things were allowed to survive for a few months. And if you did a referendum to the fish and shrimp of the Gulf, would you like another blowout this year like the one we had last year, or do you want another open season of fishing? I'm not sure what they would say. But the fear that the oil would kill them outright did not pan out. The fish were still there living. It remains to be seen whether their reproduction will be affected. But my guess, and a lot of people are guessing about what will happen, my guess is that the future effects are unlikely to be worse than the effects that we saw while the oil was fresh and flowing and concentrated.
So does the Gulf of Mexico still produce more seafood than like the Chesapeake Bay, the Mid-Atlantic, and New England fisheries combined?
I'm not sure if that's an accurate statistic, but the idea is right. It's the largest seafood producing region in the United States outside of Alaska.
And it still is.
And it still is, yeah.
So we're not painting as bad a picture as possible. It sounds like the legislative picture is actually worse than the actual scientific picture.
what happened to cause the blowout is inexcusable, and the resolute, unflinching determination to learn nothing from it is also inexcusable. But the effects of the oil are not nearly as bad as people feared, and I think that we were in some ways very lucky. In some ways, I think we dodged a bullet. I think that it would be possible to have a worse thing happen in the Gulf. The Ixtoc blowout went on for about 9 months, about 30 years ago. That was on the Mexican side of the Gulf, and that was only in 165 feet of water. This was in 5,000 feet of water. It seems conceivable to me that there could be a blowout which spews a lot more oil for a much larger period of time. There could be wells that blow out closer to shore that create more damage and more of a mess. And there could be things which, you know, clearly not as bad as what happened, but we're not doing anything to make sure that the next time this happens, we have the right equipment to plug a leaking oil well. I mean, it is an oil well after all. You would think that the companies can deal with oil coming out of a well. That's their business. It was really shocking, the complete lack of preparation, because in 30 years of tremendously advancing oil technology and going into incredibly deep water that they never went into 10 years ago, in those 30 years, they did absolutely nothing on the let's get ready for an accident side of the equation. Absolutely nothing.
And Carl, where do you feel that listeners should do in order to solve these problems or future problems?
Well, I think the first thing would be to remove the subsidies from the oil companies. That would be the best political initiative that would be aimed at the heart of the monster.
And free up a lot of tax money at the same time.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. We give an awful lot of money, our tax money, in a budget situation like we have, but yet we're still giving all kinds of money in order to make more pollution. And so that is a rather strange way of doing things. Carl, Blue Ocean Institute has a list of seafood that is environmentally good to eat or bad to eat. Has the Gulf blowout affected that list at all?
You can see the list at blueocean.org, and we have an iPhone app for it. No, not really, because the contaminated fish or the fish that were suspect of contamination and shellfish were not allowed in the market. The fisheries were shut down for many months, and then there was a lot of exhaustive testing before they were let back on. So it didn't really affect us because the contaminated fish were really not in commerce.
So blueocean.org to learn about fish all over. It's a wonderful list because it's not just a list of don't eat these fish because they're not fished well or they have a low reproductive rate, but also a list of fish that are environmentally good to eat for different reasons. The fishing practices are good. The reproductive rates are good. So it's both what to do and what not to do instead of just what not to do, which is wonderful. And I want to thank Carl Safin, and thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much.